All right, let's start. I want to kind of review, because we've been in the household code since chapter 5, about verse 22, somewhere in there, 21. The principle is stated in Ephesians 5:21. We go back and look at it. And everything that followed all the way through where we're at today, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. I think that's the starting point for these household codes. That is, that this should be symbolic or should be representative of all of these relationships. There's this mutual understanding of each other and ultimately accountability to each other. A second thing is we note in this pattern, Paul always starts with the subordinate and goes to the leader. Notice, for example, wives, subordinate. And then he goes into husbands. That's the one that's over the wife. And I told you that's foreign to our culture. You'll notice 6:1, children. And then in verse 4, fathers. So he's addressing the subordinate first and then does basically the same thing here, slaves and then masters. So there was a definite order here where Paul wanted to address the subordinates first and then those who were overseers or leaders of that particular relationship. All of these have a parallel. All of these have a parallel. For wives, you submit to your husbands like you would Christ. Husbands, you love your wives as Christ loved the church. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. And we talked about that last week in the kids' sermon. That was a reference to as you would Christ. So in other words, kids, if you don't obey your parents, you're really not obeying Christ at the same time. Okay, fathers, do not provoke your children, but bring them up in the instruction of the Lord. So there's always this parallel, and Paul does it again today in our text. Now, in looking at our text, when we talk about this text in particular, we are talking about the Christian family, because if you read the little outline that I did there, the side note, you'll note that slaves, they were considered really part of the home. They had responsibility. Most of the slaves were better educated than their masters, and some of them were better cultured than their masters. So just because you hear the term slave, they had professional slaves back then. But they were also considered part of the home. And anyway, so does this apply? And I think it does. Does it apply if you have an unsaved boss? I think it does, because the only way you can really truly apply this text to here and now is the reality of employee-employer. And I think it applies. I think it probably applies even more, because you want to show your boss and your employer what a Christian looks like in the workforce. And I think it's a big deal. First of all, I've tried to simplify this, and I think it's pretty easy. Work for Christ. That is, on Monday morning when you get up, you go and you do your work for Christ. Do not do it simply for your employees now or your employer. Listen to this. Slaves, that is, those who were owned by somebody else. Slaves, obey your earthly masters. And Paul uses this word masters, kyrios, which is the same for Lord, but in a different way, obviously, but as the overseer. Or earthly, referring to fleshly, that is, the person in flesh who is your overseer at this place of employment. And the word obey really doesn't change from what we discussed last week. It means to do what you're told to do. Now the question is, ethically, are you always supposed to do what your employer tells you to do? I'm not so sure about that, particularly if the employee or the employer asks you to do something that's, number one, against the law, or number two, is unethical. I'm pretty sure all of us have been in environments like that. I was in the military for 12 years. I understood all this, and there were some things I could not do. I also got feedback for that, but I couldn't do them because they were unethical. I think in those cases, it's right to say and state your opinion on the issue. Maybe your boss would understand. But at the end of the day, I think Christians should be the best employees in the workforce. These guys obviously didn't know they were going to be on my sermon. This guy got Employee of the Year. Why don't we try to shoot for that? Why don't we try to shoot for being Employee of the Year in our workplace? I know most of you are retired. Maybe you can look back over your time and think, well, maybe I did this wrong, maybe I did this right. But those of you that are still in the workforce, this is something to think about. That when we go to work, we are representing Jesus Christ to a world that desperately needs to know him. And if we're just as bad as the person next to us or the coworker who does not know Jesus Christ, then there's really no difference, and then Jesus is not really in the workplace. So there should be a difference. How do we carry this out? Now, Paul gives us the means here by which we carry out this command of obeying. And I think it's important that we obey. Ultimately, I think it all goes back to Christ, because if you're not obeying God in this, then you're probably not obeying God on a larger scale anyway. So let's look at how we do this. Now notice what he says, with fear and trembling. These two words were very plain, very simple, understand. One, fear means respect, much as you would have respect for God. The other one meant trembling, which is quivering, which is where we get the Greek equivalent of quivering. And I don't think that means in the sense of being fearful, and though there are times you probably should be fearful if you're not doing your job, but there is this idea contained here that is a respectful understanding or responsibility to that boss. Who writes your paycheck? Your boss does. That means that there should come a time when you have some respect for him. When I was in the Army, and that's really the only place I can really go with this because it's been so long since I went out of the military and into ministry, but there were officers that I had absolutely no respect for, but on a personal level. But on a professional level, what I had respect for was that captain's bar that was on their collar, the major bar, the colonel bar, and when I walked by them, I gave them a salute and said, "Good morning, sir." It was a respect for the position, and I think that's what Paul's talking about here. Some things you're not going to like about your employers or your employer, but you still have respect for them because they are in that position. And you are under them and they write your paycheck. So we do that with a sense of respect. I thought this was funny. I like Sloshkies. You guys like the sandwich? I love it. I saw this. Clothes for attitude adjustment. It was on the news. Owner closes restaurant, believes employees need an attitude adjustment. I don't know what that's about, but I know in simple terms that ain't good. Now, let me ask you a question. Those of you that are in the workforce, would your boss think you need an attitude adjustment? I have met through my years, I have met Christians that I'm like, "Whoa, dude, you need to chill out. You're getting a bad name here." Everybody looks at you when they see you coming, they're like, "Here comes trouble," and they move. Because they get an attitude, everything, fought with everything. And I'm thinking to myself, doesn't it take more energy to do that than just show up and do your job when you're told to do it, and you do it correctly, and you do it for God? See, I think if we go in the workforce tomorrow and we say, okay, when we get in our car and when we start driving, we go, "You know what? I may not like everything about my boss, but I'm going to respect the position because he's in that position, and I'll do everything I can that he tells me to do. If it's ethical and it's moral, I don't have any problem doing it. I'm not going to give him any flack. I'm not going to give him any feedback, negative feedback, unless he asks for it. What do you think?" Usually a good boss will say, "What do you think about this?" And you let your employees kind of give you some feedback. But just putting it quite simply, when these slaves who had no rights were told by Paul to obey their masters and to do it with fear and trembling, Paul clearly understood that there needed to be a level of respect. There needed to be a level of looking at your boss in a correct way and getting an understanding of who he is and who you are in relationship. And I think it's big. Notice what he says. With singleness of heart. This is interesting. This word literally means, singleness of heart, literally means, get this, listen to this. We've all done it, we've all violated it, and I'm going to say it anyway. Speaking without hidden meaning. Mm-mm. I thought this was good. It's these two employees kicking back. he's imitating the boss. I wonder if the boss is like right down the hall there, and this guy's laughing and they're making fun of him. When that boss comes back, the banana goes away. Morning, sir. That's what Paul's talking about. It is about being the same in the break room that you are on the work floor. It's there should be no difference. It shouldn't be, I'm going to talk bad about my boss, I'm going to trash him, and I'm going to have a divided heart here. When he looks at me, I'm going to make sure that I'm working. But when he turns his back, I'm going to talk about him like he's a beat-up old dog in the gutter. Paul says, with singleness of heart. Fear, because see, if you don't have respect for the position, let's talk about that. If you don't have respect for the position, it will affect your heart. Actually, I think maybe you could reverse these and say, if it's in your heart that you're divided in your loyalty to your boss, then it's going to come out in the way that you respond to him. So to make sure that we don't do this in the workforce, how many of you have done that? Show of hands. Yeah, I know. We've all done it. I was guilty of it. I used to joke with my sergeants, and it was wrong, Ben. I was wrong. It felt good at the time doing it. Until one time I got caught doing it in basic training. You never get caught in basic training making fun of the drill sergeants, ever. I was up there talking about the M16 boot, and I was imitating Drill Sergeant Caswell. Because he'd walk around like this. You better get those boots moving up, up like this. And I was doing that, and everybody was cracking up. And all of a sudden, Drill Sergeant Caswell was standing there like this. Come here, boy. Yeah, it took me a while to recover from those 100 push-ups, but I didn't do it again. You got to be careful. You know, and when you claim Christianity, seriously, when you claim Christianity, and then you go around with the coworker. This guy thinks it's funny. I wonder if the boss came around the corner if the banana would be like that. But he looks at him, and when he tells him about Jesus Christ, you're no different than me. We joke around on the floor all the time. You talk bad about people. You do all that kind of stuff. Why do I want your Jesus? It's an issue. It can be an issue. Now notice what else he says here. Not only in singleness of heart, as you would Christ, there's the key, underline it, as you would Christ, not by way of eye service as people pleasers. That is, by way of eye service, working only when you are watched. You guys do that? Boss comes in. I used to have guys on the line when I was in the Army, and I could see them from my window. I could see them out on the line. Rodriguez was one I was constantly getting on. He would get under the vehicle with a little roll cart. He would get under the vehicle, and I wouldn't see any movement for 40 or 50 minutes. Just, and one day I saw his foot go. He was under that vehicle with his toolbox sleeping. So I walked down the line. And of course, I made sure I walked down the line, because if the first sergeant caught that, guess who's going to get yelled at? Me. And then, of course, it's trickle-down yelling. I kicked it like that, and Rodriguez said, yes, yes. And I said, wake up. He woke up. I wish I could go back, really. I do. I wish I could go back and really work for Christ in the military. I wish I'd have had a pastor that preached this when I was younger, and I could have transferred that into the, I mean, I wasn't a bad witness, not a lot. I did make some mistakes, but you don't want to be labeled as doing what you are doing just to be noticed. And believe me, there's a lot of people out there that they will work when the boss's eye is on them. Oh yeah, they're the most greatest employee they've ever had. The moment the boss goes away, playing cards. I realize that there's some shamming, that was the word we used in the Army, shamming going on at times. It's hard to work full straight day without taking a little break. I get that. But when the breaks last a long time and there's this going on, it doesn't, does it sit well with Christ? Does it sit well with the fact that you've been bought by a price? Does it sit well with the fact that you claim to be Christian in a workforce and you are the laziest worker in the place? Constantly arguing with your boss, constantly criticizing and constantly talking to others about your boss. It just doesn't sit well. So when you go out there, make sure that you're doing the means right. That is, you work for Christ. Now notice, that's the negative. Not by way of eye service as people pleasers. You're not here to please men. You're here to please God. But as servants of Christ, notice verse 6, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God. I love that phrase, the will of God, because we get that so confused. Knowing the will of God is quite easy. Knowing the will of God is quite easy. There's times when it's not, but most people think doing the will of God is like down this secret hallway to the left, and then you've got to go by this and down this pathway and back over here, and somehow you'll arrive at... No, we know that loving people, doing a good job at work, witnessing, we know all of those things are the will of God. So when we're out there in the workforce, when he says, but as servants of Christ, when you go to work tomorrow morning, you work for Jesus. Let me ask you a question. If you're working for Jesus, how will that quantify your work? If you're doing it for man, I'll tell you, be honest with you, you know, just being honest. If you're doing the work for men, your boss is not going to get the same quality of work. Now, if you do it for Christ, when I sit down, I don't want this to sound harsh. When I sit down and go over my sermon, and I write the sermon, I take time to do it, do you know who I do that sermon for? I don't primarily do it for you guys. I primarily do it for Christ. Primarily. I realize secondarily, God has to influence me in how I preach this. I get that, and how it goes into our culture and our context. I fully understand that. But when I sit down and write a sermon, I am writing it for him so that he can put a stamp of approval. And if there's some Sunday, this has happened, rare, very rare in my case. How many times have I preached in this pulpit ever since I got here where I did not have a PowerPoint? Anybody remember that? As far as I know, it hadn't happened. As far as I know. Now, the criticism I've had on these PowerPoints is from other pastors, friends of mine, is that it takes way too long to do that. Okay. Don't do it. This is the way I do it. This, I think visual images and the word come together and it solidifies in the heart. You get a picture of it, you can understand it, and you can apply it. Okay. Don't do it. But don't get up there on Sunday morning, having studied on Saturday night, not spend time with the sermon during the week, not having spent time with that, and then get up there on Saturday evening and start jotting down a few notes and get up there on Sunday morning. I don't think God honors that. He may bless it, but I don't think he honors it because you haven't really given the best for God. So this applies to me too. I want you to understand that when I do a sermon, I do it for God because I know that someday this little piece of paper and the papers that I have and my theology will stand before him. So I want to do the best for him. So what you do is, when you go to work, forget about working for your boss. Yeah, you have to listen to him and all that. Don't let that be the motive why you do what you do. Let it be that you go to work on Monday morning and you work for Christ. I would venture to say, please, if you would try this, I would venture to say that if you went to work and worked for Christ, your work productivity would increase greatly. In fact, anything that we do should be done for Christ, not men. Rendering service, Paul says, with a good will. Good will means zeal and loyalty. Some say zeal. I say zeal sometimes. Zeal and loyalty. As, notice what he says, as to the Lord and not to man. What does it come down to? So what's the key here? Well, I think the key is this. Work willingly at whatever you do, as though you are working for the Lord, rather than for people. You go out and you clean the yard, you do it for God. You do stuff in the church, you do it for him. Your productivity would greatly increase if you understood, or we understood, if we understood the easiest principle is that whatever we do in this life, whether it's ministry, whether it's work, whether it's anything, that if we do it for God, I can't see us slacking when we have that type of motivation. I can't see us giving God seconds or thirds. I can see us really working hard. So tomorrow morning when you get up, and I know a lot of you go to work on Monday morning. You go to work. When you get in your car and you get ready to turn that ignition, you say, wait a minute. Today I'm going to go to work for Christ. I'm not going to do what my other fellow employees do, trash the boss and all that. I'm just going to go to work and I'm going to work for Jesus and I'm going to do the best I can. And then you give it to your boss. I just think that that's the right. And I really wish I'd have had I did my motivation in military for my kids and my wife, and there was some God in there, but I didn't have this explained to me, and I wish I would have. I think I would have been better than I was. I think I would have been more productive. The sermon for me came, 30 years too late, I guess. But so, Chris, when you go to work tomorrow morning, you don't work for your boss. You work for Christ. And Dave, when you go there, you don't work for the city of Champaign or Urbana. You go to work for Christ. You know that. And I think it goes better. Work for Christ, to whom all will report. We're going to get a report card. Notice verse 8a. Knowing that whatever good anyone does, knowing in the sense of you understand that there's coming a day when Christ will judge your works. Big confusion on Christians. I heard it recently from a Christian. Well, I want to make sure that when I stand before him, I don't have any sin that he's going to judge me on. You're not judged on sin. Sin was done with at the cross. That's done away with. What you are judged on is when you stand before the judgment seat of Christ, not the Bema seat, the great white throne of judgment. That's a totally separate judgment. But when you stand before the judgment seat of Christ, Christ will judge you on the motives of your heart, why you did what you did, and will base your rewards on that, not on sin. Sin was done away with, because sin cannot get into heaven. Therefore, you cannot get into heaven with sin. Therefore, if you stand before Christ with sin, then you're going to have to wind up going in the other judgment because it was not paid for. So we have to understand that knowing whatever good he does, there has to be this understanding that our work and your work at work, when you work, that'll be judged. The motives of your heart, I think all that's judged. How this plays out in the realm of eternity, I have no idea. But I do know this. And all of us in this room that claim to know Jesus Christ, we know this. We will be judged by Christ at some point. I like what Curtis Vaughn says here. Earthly masters might not take note of faithful service rendered to them, but the Christian slave can know, that's us, Christian slave, can know that Christ will not fail to recompense their work. Hard to understand if Paul means this in the immediate sense or in the future sense. I think it maybe conveys the idea of both. But notice what he says here about the reward. He says, this he will receive back from the Lord. Is it future tense or is it now? I think it could be both. You ever work for your boss and you just think he doesn't notice anything? I've been in situations like that. I'm not going to re-beat a dead horse, but one of the worst duty stations I had in my life for 1 year was Hawaii. Was really excited to go over there because aloha and sun all the time. And I got to a boss, Lieutenant Judy and Staff Sergeant White. They were in charge of me. They basically made my life a living nightmare for about 9 months. They were trying to burn me. They were trying to take my rank. And so I stepped up. They said, be here at 5. I was there at 4:30. I had two young kids at the house. I had my wife was young. We depended on my paycheck, so I went there. That was wrong. If I'd had a different mentality, it'd have been better. That was wrong. Because I did fear them at that time, because I feared what they could do. 9 months in, I called my mom and I said, "Mom, I'm coming home. I had 40 or 59 days, whatever you have to have. 60 days is the most you can acquire at one time in the military." And at that point, I was under such duress that I needed to get out of there. So we got plane tickets. We went back home. I'll never forget, even when I was getting ready to go on vacation, they made me go to the field. Even though I was only going to be in the field 2 days, they made sure I was back by midnight to sign out. That's how much pressure they were putting me on. And I remember going home thinking, when I get back, they're going to trump up some type of charge and they're going to bust me from the rank of sergeant promotable. I just know it. I can sense it. And, you know, the first 2 weeks at home, I was like kind of relaxed. I didn't have to worry about things. Then I had to make that plane flight back home. Had to be there by midnight. You have to sign in by midnight. Those of you that were in the military, you know that. I don't know if it was like that for the Navy, but it probably was Air Force too. Sign in by midnight. When I went to sign in, after I got the kids home and Audrey taken care of, I went to sign in, and I signed in at midnight, and the sergeant that was in charge says, "Oh, there's a note here that you're supposed to report to the company commander tomorrow morning. Have a good night." Yeah, I didn't get much sleep because I was thinking, okay, something's coming. So I go at 5 o'clock in the morning. PE was at 5:55, and I make formation, and I didn't see two people. There were two people missing: Lieutenant Judy and Staff Sergeant White. So I said, "They're not here. I'll step out in front of the platoon and take charge," because I was the next in command. Company commander said, "I need to see Sergeant Frazier in my office along with the first sergeant." Do you know what happened in 30 days? In 30 days, the first sergeant and the company commander relieved Staff Sergeant White and Lieutenant Judy. When I got back, the commander called me in his office. I reported. I saluted. He said, "Sergeant Frazier, this morning you're going to inventory the entire platoon, and you are taking charge of the platoon." I was like, oh gosh. They're in that office. They're waiting for me to get there, and they're going to serve me with Article 15 papers for something. There was nothing they could have gotten me on. I don't know why I was worried about it, but I was worried about losing my rank. Now, the same sergeants that used to give me a hard time during that period because I was a Christian, when I walked down online that day, they were all like that because I had been put in charge. And so I walked down the line, didn't say a word to them. And I thought to myself, "God, do you even know what's going on here? Do you even see this?" But the God, he sees everything. Sometimes the reward will be immediate. Sometimes you're going to have to wait till the other side of this life to get it. But I can tell you this, and let me just say this, say that to say this. No matter what your situation is at work, no matter how bad things look, no matter how much pressure you're on, wish I'd had a pastor tell me this, and I'm telling you now, that's why I'm telling you, is no matter what the situation is, no matter how bad it is, no matter how much pressure you're under, no matter what's going on, I'll tell you this, situations change and God can move situations differently. You stand your ground, do what you're doing for Christ, God will bless you, He will protect you, and He will take care of you. That is a tough thing to hold on to when you're under fire. I get it. But please know this, brothers and sisters, God will reward you. Even if your boss doesn't see the late hours that you put in and you don't log in and you don't count that. God sees those late hours, and you will be rewarded because you're doing those late hours probably because you want to be a good employee and probably because you want to honor Christ with your life. And so God will reward that, even if your boss never makes notice of it. And even, and I've had this done, even sergeants who took credit for stuff that I did, I've kind of reconciled that now. Back then, I was a little wiry. I was a little more combative. And I wish I'd have known this. I wish I would have known this. I would have just trusted God with the whole thing and just said, I should have known. I should have known. I'm just sharing my heart with you. I should have known that. Nobody told me, so I tried to fight through this thing my way. And in the end, I go back and God, like, hit me with that this week. Just bam. You remember that situation? Oh, it's big in my life because I remember it. That was a moment where God took action on my behalf when I could not take action. And guess what? He will do that for you if you trust him. Just trust him. God sees it. The worst that can happen to you is you get fired. Guess what? God can move you. And I guarantee you, you'll never go hungry. I guarantee you that. And then if you do go hungry, you come to my house, you eat with me. And then we'll send you over to Glenn and Sandy's, because Sandy's a good cook. And then we'll send her, pass you around to some other people. You're not going to go hungry. Last thing. Oh, did I forget one? Yes, I did. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks where? At the heart. Just make sure your heart's right and everything's going to be okay. Make sure you're doing your work for Christ and everything will be okay. Work hard, but work for Christ. That kind of takes pressure off you, doesn't it? If you go to work on Monday morning and I'm working for Jesus rather than I'm working for my employer. I know, I was there. You go in Monday morning. Sometimes I do that on Tuesday morning when I come here. But ultimately, you got to say, I'm going to do this day, I'm going to do my work for Christ. And I think it's good. Including employers. All will report, including your employer. He may be in the other line that you don't want to be in. But he will answer. She will answer. Your employer will answer. Notice the command. Masters, do the same to them. Isn't that interesting? Paul here is telling, in the name of God and Christ, masters, do the same to them. Does that mean that masters are supposed to treat their slaves the way that their slaves are treating them? I think it is. Do the same to them. In other words, honor them. That's the way it's supposed to work in Christian business. By the way, just, you don't have to answer if you don't want to. Does anybody work for a Christian employer? I mean, I know I work for God, but is that good, Ben? Is that good? How many of you work for unbelievers? That ain't so good. I know that. If you work for a Christian employer, my wife, when she goes to work, she loves to go to work because she works with all these Christians. What an environment. And he's saying here, if you're a Christian owner or business person and you're in charge of people, treat them right, not like this. Of course, in my case, I don't have all this, so it would just look like the same. And when I was in BNOC, Basic Non-Commissioned Officer School, you do not lead like this. That's not how you lead. If you get to this point, you've already lost it. I realize, as an employer, there are times you have to lean on your people. I get that. But you should never get to this point where people are fearful of you. And she has, I don't know how she's going to get that hair go back down, but it's straight. We've all been there and done that. And if you're an employer, please don't yell at people. It's not dignified. I don't think it accomplishes anything. I've been yelled at. I was yelled at by a full bird colonel one day. And I can tell you, it ain't fun. Of course, the same full bird colonel also gave me an ARCOM for a job I did. I had a lot of respect for him. Colonel Casey came walking down that line. You made sure you were on it. And again, probably wrong. If I'd have been doing it for Christ, I'd have been on it all the time. The reason that we do this. I've actually enjoyed this sermon. I've actually really enjoyed this sermon. It's been a long time. Knowing that he who is both their master and yours, notice, all together, and the Germans would say, alle zusammen, all together. No idea where that came from, just felt like saying it. Knowing that he who is both their master and yours in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. In other words, God is everything. Let me leave you with four thoughts, and I wrote these down. First of all, commit your job to Christ. I think that's clear from this text. Two, respect your boss. Do your best, but do it for Christ. Work hard. Work for Jesus. Productivity goes up. Stand fast. When I say stand fast, I say stand fast in difficult situations because God can change those situations for your good. Please don't badmouth your boss. Please don't badmouth other employees. Don't play that. You hear that? Walk away from it. Go do your work. Let them do that. Let them do that, and then just walk away from it. And know this: God will pay you back. Maybe not now. You may not get any reward for anything you've ever done in your workplace, but you will. It's just kind of on hold. So how do you want to? I think Christianity does go on the job. It doesn't end here. It's not over right now. Monday morning when you get up, you get breakfast, you get in the car, before you turn the ignition, just sit and say, today I'm going to dedicate my job, what I do, anything that I do, I'm going to dedicate it to serving Christ. I think it'll go better. Just my thoughts.